Hi guys, and welcome to another edition of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Today is my turn to lead off and to introduce the show. So, for today, we are going to be listening to Challenge of the Yukon from 1948, Finding Silvertip. Hope you like it.
The Challenge of the Yukon. Its king, swiftest and strongest lead dog of the North Country, blazing the trail for Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police in his relentless pursuit of lawbreakers.
On game! On, you husky!
Gold! Gold! Discovered in the Yukon. A stampede to the Klondike in the greedy race for riches. Now back to the days of the gold rush, when Sergeant Preston and his wonder dog King battled through storm and snow to preserve law and order as they met the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was stationed temporarily in the town of Moose Crossing during the spring of 1899. The rivers and creeks had shed their heavy coats of ice and tumbled merrily over the rocks. A bright moon lighted up the forest around the cabin where the Mountie sat alone with his big dog King beside him. Suddenly, King raised his head and a whine sounded deep in his throat. Sergeant Preston put down the book he was reading and turned toward him.
What's the matter, fella? Hear something? What do you want, boy? Why are you pawing at my arm? Oh, quiet, King. I hear it, too. Well, it's only a wolf, a husky baying at the moon. That's not bothering you, is it, fella? All right, boy. I'll let you out. Go on out, King.
The Mountie yawned and lay down on his cot. He had had a strenuous day, and in a few minutes he had fallen into a sound, dreamless sleep. When next he awakened, the early light of dawn came through the small window of the cabin, paling the light of the lantern on the table. The Mountie sat up quickly.
King! King! Oh, now I remember. He must be outside. Funny he didn't bark to come in.
Sergeant Preston opened the cabin door and was about to call King, when he checked himself suddenly. King stood at the edge of the clearing, and beside him was a beautiful gray animal almost as large as he. It faded back into the woods like a gray ghost at the sound of the door opening, and the Mountie couldn't tell whether it was a dog or a wolf. King started back into the woods and then turned back to the cabin as he heard Preston's voice.
King, come here, boy. Come on. Well, old fellow, so that's why you didn't bark to come in last night.
From the safety of the deep underbrush in the forest, two eyes peered at the Mountie and King. The animal was a silvery gray, half wolf and half dog, and a whine of fear stirred in her throat as she saw the man and King approach each other. At the sound of the man's voice, a strange loneliness tugged at her heart, but her wolf blood kept her rooted to the spot, ready to run from the scent she had been taught to fear. And then King came toward her with his master following. Like a gray shadow, she sprang from the protecting thicket and raced into the shelter of the deep forest.
There she goes, King. I just saw the silver tip of her tail. Well, old boy, it's up to you to bring her back. Maybe together we can teach her not to be afraid of humans.
It took time, patience, and courage to tame Silvertip, as Sergeant Preston named her. But with the help of King, he finally succeeded. And it was 3 weeks later that he led her on leash to Randy McNeil, a dog breeder with the finest kennels in the North Country. Silvertip was frightened and bewildered as she was put into the runway, and only the protecting presence of King kept her from trying to gnaw the wire netting to get back to the wilderness she loved. Randy McNeil gasped with admiration.
Sergeant, that's the finest pair of animals I ever saw.
King did a good job of selecting a mate. I couldn't have done better for him if I'd picked her out myself.
She's got a lot of Timberwolf blood. That accounts for her size. But those eyes aren't wolf. They're dog's eyes if I ever saw any.
She's part dog, all right, Randy. That's why I was able to tame her.
Well, I wouldn't exactly call her tame. She'll let you handle her, but I couldn't go near her with a 10-foot pole. She doesn't trust anybody else.
She'll get over that after she's been here a while. Surroundings are strange.
She'll have to be handled carefully. Young Jim Stevens takes care of my dogs for me.
Huh?
He has quite a way with animals.
Well, doesn't your son Tom help you?
Well, Tom's pretty lazy, I'm afraid, and dogs don't seem to like him very well. I guess it's because he doesn't like them. Anyway, Tom doesn't need the money, and Jim Stevens does. Jim and his mother have been having a hard time of it since his father died.
Jim's a nice boy.
Oh, here he comes now. Hello, Jim.
Good morning, Mr. McNeil. Hello there, Sergeant Preston.
How are you, Jim?
Fine, thanks.
Take a look in that runway, Jim.
Why, it's King. Is that a dog or a wolf?
She's a little of both.
Isn't she a beauty?
You bet.
We expect a fine litter of pups from that combination. Keep an eye on her, Jim. She's valuable property. I'm going to put her in your hands completely.
Well, it's quite a responsibility. Those pups will be worth a lot of money.
I think you can handle it all right, Jim. I'll leave King here with her for a day or two. It'll help with Silvertip. If it hadn't been for King, I could never have gotten nearer.
I'll do my best, Sergeant.
Well, you better start right now, Jim. Go get some food and feed her.
Young Jim Stevens was patient and kind with Silvertip and soon won her confidence. The men in town marveled at their relationship, as she refused to make friends with anyone else. A few trappers were discussing the subject at the trading post one day when Tom McNeil, Randy's son, entered.
Yes, Jim certainly has a way with dogs. It's a marvel the way Silvertip lets him come right into her kennel.
Randy McNeil is lucky to have Jim around. I wouldn't want to fool with her. She's as wild as any full-grown wolf you could find.
Hello, boys.
Oh, hello, howdy, boy. Howdy. We were just talking about that female wolf Sergeant Preston is keeping at your dad's kennels.
Yeah, I heard you. She's an ugly beast if ever I saw one.
Well, Jim Stevens doesn't seem to have much trouble with her.
Jim's hipped on the subject of dogs. As far as I can see, it's about the only thing he knows.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I mean, Jim's a right smart boy. Your dad's lucky to have him around.
Meaning, I suppose, that he's not too lucky to have me.
No, I didn't say that.
Well, that's what you meant. Just because I don't happen to like fooling around with a lot of mangy curs, you seem to think you have the right to criticize.
Nobody's criticizing you. You're just putting words into people's mouths.
I can tell by the way everybody acts what you're thinking. Well, just because I happen to have more money than most of you and don't have to work, that doesn't mean I'm not as smart as Jim Stevens.
Why, Tom, you sound as if you're a little jealous of
jealous.
Jim.
Jealous? Jealous of him? That's good. Jealous.
But Tom McNeil was jealous of Jim Stevens. He had hated him from the first time they had met, and he had secretly envied Jim's strength and courage. There was one way that Tom could antagonize him, and that was through the dogs that Jim loved. It was several days later that Jim discovered him teasing Silvertip. With a long dog whip, Tom flicked at her over the wire fence as Silvertip snarled in helpless rage.
I'll show you, you dirty wolf. Snarl at me, will you? That'll teach you.
Put down that whip.
Oh. So here comes the nursemaid. You can't order me around.
You hit that dog again and I'll wrap that whip right around your neck.
These kennels belong to my father, not you. I can do as I please around
that
here.
That dog belongs to Sergeant Preston. He's boarding her here and I'm taking care of her. If I told your father what you were doing, he'd whip you himself.
Is that so? Well, I'll tell him what I was doing. Using a whip on a fresh upstart that won't mind his own business.
Oh, well, you dirty little... Come down off that fence.
Let go of me.
I'll teach you to use a whip on that dog or me.
Get away from me, you...
Drop that whip.
You're hurting my arm.
Drop it. Now, if you want to fight, fight with your fist.
Let go of me. I'll show you.
Oh, why, you... Uh-oh. Get up. Get up and take your medicine.
You keep away from me. I'm going to report this to my father.
You keep away from those kennels after this. I'm warning you. The next time I catch you teasing this dog, I'll skin you alive. Now get out of here, fast.
You dirty bully. You'll be sorry for this.
You better go into the house and put some raw meat on that eye. It's going to swell.
It was later in the day that Randy McNeil entered the house and found Tom sitting alone, his right eye almost swollen shut.
Hey, Tom, what's wrong with your eye?
What's it look like?
You've been fighting?
I suppose Jim told you all about that.
Jim? Well, no, I just left him. He didn't say anything about it. Who did he?
Guess there's a good reason he didn't say anything about it. He was the one who hit me.
Tell me what happened.
He's getting too big for his boots. He thinks he owns these kennels of yours. Taking care of that wolf that Sergeant Preston left here is sure going to his head.
He's done a fine job with Silvertip. Not many people could have handled him.
Sergeant Preston better watch out. Jim seems to think that dog is his private property. I wouldn't trust him with it.
Hey, Tom, that's ridiculous.
You're always bragging about him and sticking up for him. Guess I should have known better than to say anything to you.
That's not true, son. I like Jim, yes. But I don't want to be unfair.
And then you better listen to me and keep an eye on him. He's nothing but a sneak. Those pups that Silvertip is going to have are going to be worth a lot of money. There's a reason that Jim is getting so friendly with that dog.
I don't know what you're driving at, Tom.
All I say is, keep your eye on Jim. Remember, he needs money, and those pups will bring a fancy price. That's why he ordered me to stay away from the kennels. He doesn't want anybody watching him.
Well, he hasn't any right to do that. I'll speak to him about it.
Oh, he'll think up some fancy lie to tell you, I suppose. Maybe someday you'll find out what he's really like.
Jim Stevens was very fond of Randy McNeil and knew the old man would be hurt if he knew the truth about his son, Tom. So he was rather evasive when Randy questioned him about the fight they had had.
It was just a flare-up, Mr. McNeil. I guess I lost my temper.
Well, it's not like you, Jim. From what I've seen of you, I didn't know you had a bad temper. I wish you'd tell me what happened.
Well, it was just that Tom doesn't like Silvertip very well, and he said some things that got me kind of mad, I guess.
What did he say?
Oh, nothing much. I guess I was feeling a little edgy or something.
I know Tom isn't too reliable, Jim. He's hot-headed and quick-tempered. I guess he just resented it when you told him to keep away from the kennels.
I suppose I had no right to do that. They belong to you, and he's your son.
Well, that's right, but you're in charge of them. If Tom ever does anything he shouldn't around here, it's your job to report it to me. I'd rather you didn't fight it out between you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. We'll forget about it now. And let's not let anything like this happen again, eh?
I'm sure it won't, sir.
Hey, Sergeant Preston. Hello there, Sergeant.
Hello, Randy. Hello, Philip. How are you, Jim?
Hello, Sergeant Preston.
Thought I'd drop around and see how Silvertip's getting along.
Oh, she's fine. Come on over and look at her.
All right.
You going to be here long, Sergeant?
Well, I've been transferred back here to Dawson, Randy. My assignment at Moose Crossing's over with.
Well, that's good news. We'll be seeing more of you now, I hope.
Oh, I'll still be going out on patrols, but I'll be back here periodically.
There's Silvertip.
King's glad to see her. Want to go on the runway, fella? There. Gate's open. Go ahead, boy.
Those pups will be here in a few days.
I have to be careful of her. Silvertip keeps trying to get out. She started to dig under the fence day before yesterday.
Silvertip wants to have her pups out in the woods someplace, I suppose. She's part wolf, and she'd like to find a nice cave somewhere for her pups.
Say, that looks like a scar or a scratch on her head. You haven't used a whip on her, have you, Jim?
I should say not. I've never whipped her.
She may have done that when she tried to dig out under the fence.
Those dogs are glad to see each other. Do you think you'll be around here when the pups are born, Sergeant?
Why, I hope I am, Randy. I have to take a trip south tomorrow, but I'll be back in a week. I certainly want to be here for the big event.
3 days had passed, and Sergeant Preston with King had left town on a patrol to the south. The late spring days were long, and only a few hours of darkness covered the Northland each night. Silvertip paced restlessly in her runway. Her instinct told her to find a place in the woods for her coming family, a quiet place where no human eye could watch her and no human hand could take away her young. Every night she took advantage of the few hours of darkness to seek a means of escape. Suddenly she stopped and sniffed the air as her sharp ears caught a sound in the shadows. Then the fur on her back rose as she recognized the scent of Tom, whom she hated. She backed away from the fence with a snarl.
There you are, you dirty wolf. Quit snarling. I'd like to give you a taste of this whip. Trying to get out as usual, huh? Well, this time you're going to get your wish. Here goes the gate. Get out. Get out, I say. Keep going. Don't come near me or you'll get a taste of this whip. There she goes. Hope that's the last of her. Now, Jim, maybe you're not going to be the fair-haired boy anymore. You're going to have a hard time explaining this.
Silvertip traveled through the forest with a mile-eating lope that soon put a great distance between her and the kennels. She paused at intervals to rest and to drink from the running streams. But Dawn found her still on her way, seeking a place of safety. That morning, there was a great deal of excitement at Randy McNeil's.
I can't see how Jim could have been so careless. The gate was wide open.
I wonder if he was just careless.
What do you mean?
I told you somebody should have watched him. I doubt that he did leave that gate open accidentally.
But Jim wouldn't want Silvertip to run away.
Maybe she didn't run away. He may not want you to think so.
You mean he...
He probably has her hidden somewhere. When she has her pups, he'll sell them secretly and nobody will ever find out. He can make a lot of money.
Tom, that's silly. I know Jim is honest.
He sure has fooled you.
Of course, leaving the gate unlatched was very careless.
I'll say it was. Here he comes now. Hope you're not too easy on him.
Good morning.
Hello, Jim.
Why is this gate open? Where's Silvertip?
Maybe you can answer that better than we can.
Tom.
What do you mean?
I'm afraid you were a little careless last night, Jim. I found this gate open this morning. Silvertip is gone.
The gate open? Silvertip gone? But that gate was shut tight when I left last night. I remember shutting it. I fed her, and I know I shut the gate when I went out.
Well, it looks as if you didn't shut it tight enough. You should have made sure.
But I did. I remember.
You don't remember opening it again later, do you?
Just what are you trying to say?
Maybe you know where the dog is and just aren't telling.
Why, you...
How easy, Jim. Stop it. That'll do, Tom. I don't want any fighting around here.
I'm sorry, sir, but he hasn't any business saying I'm a thief.
Well, he didn't mean that, Jim.
I don't see how I can ever face Sergeant Preston. Those pups were going to be worth a lot of money.
They sure will be.
Tom!
I'm sorry, Mr. McNeil, but I'm not going to work here anymore.
Jim, this doesn't mean that I think
I'm going to try and find Silvertip. I must find her.
There's no way you can, Jim. If it was wintertime, you could track her. But there isn't a sign of her tracks on this dry ground.
If Sergeant Preston were here, King could trail her.
Preston won't be back for about 4 days. By that time, her trail will be cold.
If anybody planned to steal her, he'd have all that figured out.
I don't want you to quit, Jim. Everybody gets careless once in a while. I won't hold it against you.
No. I don't want to work here anymore anyway. Your son and I just don't seem to get along. I promised Jules Demurl that I'd go into partnership with him after Silvertip's pups were born. I'll be able to do it right away, I guess.
Jules is a trapper, isn't he?
Yes, we're going to put out a trap line north of here. Of course, I'll wait until Sergeant Preston gets back.
I don't envy you when he does. If I were you, I'd start for those trap lines right away.
I usually face things, Tom, and tell the truth about them. I think even you would find that it paid. No, Mr. McNeil, I'll stay and see Sergeant Preston. He'll be here in a few days.
Sergeant Preston looked grave as he talked to Randy McNeil after his return to Dawson City.
Of course, I'm very disappointed, Randy. I did want those pups. But I'm not blaming you.
Have you talked to Jim?
Why, yes. Jim came to see me as soon as I got back.
I feel sorry for the boy, but I can't help but think he was pretty careless. I'm sure that's all there was to it.
What do you mean? What else could you think?
Well, Tom seemed a little suspicious of me. It kind of made me wonder.
Suspicious of Jim? Why?
Well, we all knew how much Jim liked Silvertip. Huh? He's poor, needs money. If he could have taken her somewhere and hidden her...
If you mean that Jim was trying to steal those pups, Randy, you're wrong. I know Jim better than that.
That's the way I feel about him, too. But Tom claims we only know the nice side of him. He's got a bad temper, it seems.
Tom has never liked Jim.
They never got along together. That's why Jim is going away. He won't work here anymore.
Yes, he said he was going north
to trap with Jules DeMurl.
I'm sorry to lose him. He was a big help to me.
You can't blame the boy for not wanting to work here. He feels that you blame him for losing Silvertip. Oh, if only I'd been here, King could have trailed her, couldn't you, boy?
If we knew which direction he took, he might be able to find her. He might run across her trail somewhere.
He'd know her trail all right, but it would take months to find her. No, it's no use. But wherever she is, I hope she's safe.
As Sergeant Preston and Randy talked about Silvertip, she lay quietly in a cave beside a stream deep in the forest. Nuzzling close to her side were five tiny furry shapes, and Silvertip was filled with pride and happiness as she licked them and whimpered to them softly. The following weeks passed swiftly, and Silvertip ranged the forest for food for the hungry mouths of her whelps, who never seemed to have enough. It was on one of these foraging trips that she came across a familiar scent that stopped her in her tracks and brought an eager whine from her throat. It was the scent of Jim Stevens, and Silvertip started to follow it when the thought of her hungry pups held her back. She turned and headed toward her cave. Less than a mile away, Jim sat before a campfire talking to Jules, the French-Canadian trapper who had taken him into partnership.
We've made a good catch, Jules. This is fine trapping country.
The game this year is not so plentiful as most seasons, but is not so bad as some season I've known.
I think we've done very well. We'll have to get these furs back to the trading post before we get too many to carry. Gee, I wish I hadn't hurt my foot yesterday. We need more supplies, too.
Well, me, I think I make trip to trading post alone tomorrow. I take big load of fur to trade and bring back supplies for us. You stay here at camp.
That's a good idea, Jules, if you don't mind going alone. I can walk all right if I don't go too far, but I'm afraid the trip to town would be too long a distance.
It'd better if you stay here and rest.
I think I'll go over to the stream and do some fishing tomorrow. This is the last of our fresh meat, and I could use a dinner of fish.
That good. That keep you from walk too much.
By the time you get back, my foot will be better, and then we can make the rounds of our trap line.
Jim sat fishing beside the stream, enjoying the warm sunshine that slanted through the trees, when suddenly he heard the sound of a terrific fight between two animals. The sound came from downstream. Leaving his fishing pole on the bank, Jim hurried toward it as fast as his lame foot would carry him.
That sounds like a wolf or a dog. That other sound, it must be a wolverine. I wish I had my gun.
As Jim rounded a bend in the stream, his eyes widened with surprise and alarm. Silvertip, before the opening of her cave, was fighting furiously with a large wolverine, the fiercest animal in the forest. Silvertip was no match for it, but wounded and staggering, she held her ground and fought valiantly for her pups inside the cave. Jim picked up a large piece of wood from beside the stream, and in spite of his lame foot, ran to her aid. As he lifted the club to strike the wolverine, the animal turned, and as the club descended, the beast sprang at Jim, ripping his leg open to the bone. Jim's club landed with a skull-crashing blow, but he staggered and fell beside the wounded Silvertip as the blood gushed from his leg.
Oh, my leg. Silvertip, I found you at last. If I can just drag myself to you, I can help you. You puppies. That's why you were fighting so hard. You're hurt, old girl. But I killed that wolverine. Everything's getting black. I'm getting faint, I guess. I'm losing so much blood, I got to stop this bleeding. If I can tear a piece off this shirt. There. Now, if I can tie it around my leg. Oh. I'm so weak. Better make a tourniquet. There. Everything's starting to get dark again.
Sergeant Preston was returning from his usual patrol north. As he walked his horse along the trail, his big dog King ran well ahead of him.
Easy, fella.
Suddenly, King stopped
as
a familiar scent crossed the trail. It was the scent of Silvertip, who early that morning had crossed it in her search for food. As the Mountie approached him, the great dog barked with excitement.
What's wrong, King? Oh, hold it. Now listen, King, we haven't time to go chasing something in the woods. No hunting today, boy.
King, come back here.
King tried to tell his master that this wasn't an ordinary scent that he wanted to follow. He ran back into the woods and waited, barking at the Monty, trying to urge him to follow.
Well, you're determined, aren't you? All right, I suppose we better find out what's bothering you. Come on. Hope it's worth a rough trip to those woods. All right, King, we're coming. Come on, fella, get up there.
It was later that Jim Stevens opened his eyes and saw the figure of Sergeant Preston bending over him in the dim light of the cave. He tried to remember where he was.
What? Sergeant Preston.
Don't worry, Jim. You're going to be all right now. Here, drink this water.
Oh, thanks.
Take some more if you want it.
I seem to be awfully thirsty.
You lost a lot of blood, that's why.
The Wolverine clawed me before I killed it.
I thought that's what had happened. Here, drink some more water. Good thing you got that tourniquet on before you fainted. Those claws had almost severed an artery.
You must have got here just after I fainted.
Yes, I did. Matt was lucky, too. You had the tourniquet tied so tightly that there was no blood going into your leg at all. You're not out of danger yet. I'll have to get you to a doctor to save that leg. But wait a while till you're rested.
Silvertip. She all right?
She was hurt quite seriously, but I think she'll pull through, Jim. You know, it's a fine litter of pups.
Sergeant, I guess this looks pretty bad for me, doesn't it?
Well, what do you mean, Jim? Well,
finding me here with Silvertip, I mean. I suppose you'll believe what Tom said, that I stole her and hid her away like this.
No, Jim. In the first place, it wouldn't have been possible unless you'd penned her up somewhere. This is a place that Silvertip herself would have chosen to have her litter.
Thanks, Sergeant.
I would like to hear how you found her, though.
Just by accident. I was fishing and heard the fight. I didn't have a gun, so I grabbed a club. That Wolverine was killing her.
King must have got the scent of Silvertip on the trail. I followed him here.
But if I go back to town with you, it will mean we leave Silvertip here. She's wounded and can't protect herself alone.
Well, don't worry about that, Jim. We won't leave her here alone. I'm leaving King here with her. After all, those pups are half his. He ought to take some responsibility.
She'll be safe with King.
I'll come back and get her and the pups after we get you fixed up. Oh, Jim, even though you haven't accused Tom in any way, I think I know who let Silvertip get away.
I didn't want to accuse him. I had no proof. But he hated her, all right.
Yes, and he hated you. He's very jealous of you, Jim.
That's why I can't work for Mr. McNeil, even though I like dogs.
I think it would be nice if you went into the dog breeding business yourself, Jim.
But I can't. I have no capital. I'd have
you, to... You have Silvertip, and I'm giving you the pups, all except one.
But, Sergeant, they're yours, and Silvertip belongs to you.
They wouldn't have been here if it hadn't been for you, Jim. This will give you a start in business.
Well,
I guess we'd better start. I'll carry you to my horse. You're staying here with your family, King. We'll be back in a day or so.
Silvertip lay quietly in the cave, her puppies curled close to her side. She felt peaceful and secure with the knowledge that the powerful form of King stood on guard outside, between her and danger. The moonlight splashed his shadow across the entrance, and Silvertip closed her eyes contentedly as she heard his long-drawn howl drift across the forest. She knew it was his way of telling his happiness to the moon. The Challenge of the Yukon, a copyrighted feature, is a George W. Trendle production, directed by Fred Flowerday and written by Mildred Merrill. The part of Sergeant Preston is played by Paul Sutton. All names and incidents used are fictitious. Listen again next week to another exciting adventure during the days of the Gold Rush. Fred Foy speaking. This program came to you from Detroit. When you hear the name Ross Dolan Detective, you can count on it being a clue to fast-moving adventure with one of radio's favorite detectives. Every Saturday night over most ABC stations, Ross Dolan Detective is on hand to solve another mysterious crime case. In the role of Ross, you hear William Gargan, popular star of screen and radio. Here is a characterization that fits Gargan like a glove, for in many of his film performances, he has played the part of a super sleuth. But back to Ross Dolan. He's a detective that talks fast and acts quickly, and when a member of the underworld spies Ross coming his way, he knows trouble's a-brewin'. Yes, Dolan has a way with a criminal, a way that leads to justice, for he doesn't pull his punches when it comes to hauling in a fugitive from Law and Order. Don't miss hearing Ross Dolan Detective when he's on the air tonight over most ABC stations. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Well, guys, I hope that you guys enjoyed that program. And now we switch it to Woodstock, Ontario, Canada, for my good friend Rick Spurgeon. So, Rick, tell us what's on the next half hour of today's lineup.
Well, hi, it's I, the rotten one, back again. And as Dagwood used to say, don't touch that dial. And the reason for that tonight is we're going to continue along with what Fred Foy told us we were going to hear. Later on in ABC was Ross Dolan Detective, as he just announced. I thought it'd be kind of fun to follow that, so we dug around, and here comes Ideal in Crime, which I think is the same series. It is still Ross Dolan. It still stars William Gargan. And let's hear if it's the same thing. Now, this would be Gargan in his earlier days, because this goes back to 1946. So it predates Barry Craig, which was his signature series, and a well-done and popular series at that. So here's a chance to do a couple of things. Let's hear an earlier Gargan, and let's hear what it would be like if you're still sitting at the radio and hadn't touched your dial, as we go back to 1946, episode 1 of Ideal in Crime with Ross Dolan.
I deal in crime.
The American Broadcasting Company presents I Deal in Crime, starring William Gargan as Ross Dolan.
My name is Ross Dolan, and in case you're inclined to say so what, pull up a chair and listen to this. I've been a private investigator for 10 years, except for a short hitch in Uncle Sugar's Navy. I've been a seaman on an LST, a gunner on a PT boat, and even made a parachute jump. That last I don't care to discuss. And just yesterday, they decided to get along without me, so I found myself on my way back to my old hangout, my office in the Melrose building. It was 8 o'clock at night, raining cats, dogs, and several other forms of livestock. I shrugged my way through the main door. Nothing had changed. The foyer still had those silly gilt figurines chasing each other around the molding. The tile floor hadn't split any wider, and the paint was just as cracked as before. Even the elevator man hadn't changed. He'd just added another dozen wrinkles to that piece of saddle leather he called a face. I called, "Fourth floor."
"Okay."
His light blue eyes lit up with a friendly gleam you find in a pair of 2-cent marbles. The floor slid past as we went up. Finally, the rickety old contraption slid to a stop. I got out and walked down the hall. I stopped at 404. On the door, I read Ross Dolan, printed in gilt letters, and below it, Private Investigation. I was home again. The cab driver tried to jip me out of a buck. My shoes had sprung a leak in a puddle, and that granite puss of an elevator man didn't even say hello. Yeah, I sure was home again. I slammed the door and fell along the wall for the light switch. I
just a moment, I looked out the window and got a panoramic gander at the town I knew so much about. Underneath all that neon and stucco, it still looked cheap and vulgar, or rich and beautiful, depending on your viewpoint. Right now, it looked cheap and vulgar. I lit the lights. The office was clean, thanks to a note I'd shot the building super a week before. I went through my mail, a couple of personal things, a bill from the Chronicle for my new ad. That's about all. I was about to take off my wet shoes when I heard the elevator go into a halt on my floor. Light footsteps came toward me. The door opened. She was the kind of a dame you see only in a dream. Tall, dark, and eyes that look as deep as a quarry pond on a quiet afternoon. This baby was class from head to foot, and from elbow to elbow. She seemed surprised to see me and turned to go. Wait. What's your hurry? Sit down. Take it easy. Riding up and down that elevator is quite an emotional experience.
I came up here to see Ross Dolan.
Well, that's fine. You came to the right place.
But you're not Ross Dolan. You're a sailor.
Oh, you're wrong, beautiful. I am Ross Dolan, and I'm not a sailor. Uncle decided he could get along without me after today.
Uncle?
Yeah, Uncle Sugar. Uncle Sam, otherwise known as the United States.
Oh, that.
That.
Mr. Dolan, if you're just out of the service, you probably are in need of a job. Would you like to make some money?
I'm afraid I would. Money and I have been strangers lately.
And should I employ you? Can you furnish references?
Oh, get out your pencil, lady, and start writing them down. Or would you rather take a fast peek at my file cabinet there? Well, there's the National Life, the American Bank, Johnny Briggs down at Homicide, and... Well, shall I go on? There's 10 years of references in that gadget.
What are your charges?
$25 a day, plus expenses.
I see.
Just what is this job? And, not to be too pressing, just who are you?
I'm Laura Shields, Mr. Dolan. And I want you to be my bodyguard.
Oh, now look, if it's just one of those tail around with me and see the big bad man doesn't hurt mama gags, you could do with a cheaper man. Get some character who's short on brains and long on muscle.
You're talking yourself out of a job, Mr. Dolan. Do you want it or don't you?
Definitely, I do.
That's better. My husband and I are living in our house at Saguna Beach. He's John Shields, a promoter.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Could you come down tomorrow?
I guess so. Give me the morning to walk up 2 flights and save 10, and I'll be all set. Ought to be there around 3 or 4.
Well, fine, fine, I'll expect you. Here's a check for 2 weeks as a retainer.
You were pretty sure of me, weren't you, Mrs. Shields?
Not at all. You'll notice that I've left the top line vacant.
Oh, yeah, so you have. Well, I'll see you tomorrow, Mrs. Shields. And by the way, just what am I supposed to guard you against?
Myself.
Guard you against yourself? Oh, suppose we drop the double talk and get down to straight language.
You want it straight, here it is. I'm afraid I'm going to kill my husband.
You don't need a private eye, lady. You need a doctor. Or the cops. Why don't you go to them?
I couldn't go to the police. You see, I love my husband. But he's been playing around with someone else.
So, it's like that, huh?
And I haven't been sleeping well. Recently, I've had dreams. I dream I'm killing him. Now I'm afraid.
Don't worry about dreams, Mrs. Shields. They can't hang you for dreaming.
But they've been getting worse. Do you want the job or not?
Well, it's okay by me. If there's any killing, it's not my funeral.
A very misplaced sense of humor.
Yeah, sorry.
When you get to Saguna Beach tomorrow, register at the Seahorse Inn. There'll be a room waiting for you.
Say, that's a classy foxhole.
And, Mr. Dolan, I hope I can trust your discretion. If word of what I was doing got out, people might think there was something wrong with me.
People knew what I was doing, they'd think there was something wrong with me, too. I got to Saguna about 3 the next afternoon. It was a typical coast town. Filling stations, drug stores, hamburger stands, and some kids shivering in their shorts. I asked a question. Where can I find John Shales?
His home is on the West Highway. But if you want to see him in person, try Jarvis's Bluebird Inn across the street.
Thanks. There was a trio there trying to play like Paul Whiteman. It looked like a pretty fair crib. I walked to a table and sat down. You couldn't miss Shields if you were wearing dark glasses on a foggy night. He was 6'3", wore dungarees and a sweatshirt, and tried to look like a combination of Randall Scott and Clark Gable. He didn't even come close. But there was something worth looking at. The babe he was gabbing with. She looked the way most Hollywood blondes would give their peroxide to look like. And the guy who bought her waitress uniform certainly had a surveyor's eye. I sat there. I waited. I waited some more. Finally, I got tired of that. Hey, miss.
Yes, sir?
I'll have a beer, please.
Yes, sir.
I watched her walk away, and it was better than watching Army's backfield. She came back.
That'll be 15 cents, please.
You from L.A.? Doing anything tonight?
That'll be 15 cents, please.
Okay, honey. I'm not only set back on my heels, but my pass has been intercepted and run back for a touchdown.
Thank you, sir.
This was the babe that Shields was nuts about. He hadn't taken his eyes off her during the whole sequence. I drank my beer, and then I went away from there. I went down the West Highway to look up Mrs. Shields.
Mr. Doublin. Oh, I'm so sorry I wasn't home when you called before. But I had some errands to run, and... Come in.
Thanks.
And here, the living room. And sit down. Have something? Drink? Sandwich? Cigar?
No, thanks.
It's almost 7, and John will be home directly. When he comes, please pretend that you're an old friend of mine. You met me in... San Francisco.
Okay by me.
And I'll call you Ross, and you must call me Laura. That will ease things up a bit, and... You won't mind being an old friend?
Lady, please.
What have you been doing the past 4 hours?
Oh, nothing much. Looking over Saguna Beach, watching your husband.
John? Is he down at that... with that...
If you mean was he down at the Bluebird with the blonde, you can pick up your dots.
There are times when I...
Laura! Hey, Laura, where are you?
Yes, John. Shh. And remember the time we had all those dances on the roof?
Well, what's this? Old home week?
Oh, darling, this is an old friend from San Francisco, Ross Dolan. Ross, this is my husband, John.
Hiya, Ross.
Hello.
You better get going with the canapés and the drinks, Laura. We're having a party.
Oh, darling, again?
Yes, again. Invited Sims, the writer, Judd, the golf pro, and my dear, dear friend, Bill Jarvis.
Jarvis?
Yeah, you sort of met him this afternoon. He runs the Bluebird.
Oh, yeah.
And old Phineas will be here, too.
Oh, John, please, not Phineas.
Yeah, Phineas.
Phineas Roth is the old man who lives in our beach shack down below us. John gives him a little money once in a while, but... Oh, he's so dirty. John always teases the poor old thing.
Yes, sir. Oh, Phineas. Sure is my meat.
Oh, dear, please, not with Ross here.
Who cares about him? Your friend, not mine. Let him in, Laura. And break out the drinks.
Oh, Mr. Jarvis, come in.
Hello, Mr. Shields.
And Phineas, how nice to see you.
Glad to see you.
You sure look tip-top, Mr. Shields. Never saw you looking better.
Yep. Look as fit as a fiddler crab.
Ross, this is Phineas Baxter. And this is Bill Jarvis.
Glad to know you.
Howdy.
This is Ross Dolan.
Seems to me I've seen you... Oh, yeah, sure. You were in my place today.
Well, Phineas, tell me. How's the beachcombing today, huh? Scraping much away from that old devil sea?
I do all right, Mr. Shields.
Mr. Shields? What kind of talk is that? You know, Dolan, Phineas here is something of a local celebrity. He's an author.
Jonathan, please.
Yes, sir, he's got something other folks in Sagona haven't got. But then, who wants it?
you're quite a comic, aren't you, Mr. Shields? Ever thought of going on the stage?
No, Mr. Dolan. Mr. Shields just having a little mite of fun at my expense. I don't mind.
Yeah, that's right. John always ribs old Phineas.
Forget that, you fellas. What did you mean by that crack, Dolan?
Oh, nothing.
Backing down, huh? How'd you like a good punch in the nose?
John, he's our guest.
He's your guest, not mine. I want you to make passes in the cafe this afternoon. Now I find him in the house making passes with my wife. You sure get around, don't you, Dolan?
Put your hands down, Shields. You're making a chump of yourself.
Is that so? Well, take a look at this.
Well, if you want it that way.
John, are you hurt?
I reckon he got on the wrong side of you, mister.
Yeah, reckon he did. Should have known that my wrong side is my right side.
You'd better trot down to the local barber shop with me, Dolan. That eye of yours is breaking out in more colors than the Sunday supplement.
Oh.
You call me later, Ross. Say in about half an hour.
Jarvis and I went down to the local barber. It turned out to be a pretty good Joe. In about an hour or so, my eye looked almost human. When the barber got through, I walked into the phone booth and got Mrs. Shields on the phone.
Everything is under control, Ross.
How's Mr. Shields feeling?
A little groggy, I guess. He took the car and went for a ride along the shore.
Want me to come up?
No, I'm all right. Besides, there might be complications. I'll see you tomorrow.
Right. Good night.
Good night, Ross. You'd better go to bed.
Yeah? Who's there?
Police! Open up!
All right. 1 o'clock in the morning. What a time to entertain a flatfoot.
You doing?
That's what it says down on the register.
Get dressed.
What for, mister? I just got undressed.
Or reverse it, chum. We want you down at the station.
Well, that's a novelty. Whatever for, officer.
We want to talk to you about a fellow named Shields. Know him?
Yep.
See him tonight?
Yep.
He give you the black eye?
Yep.
Okay, that's all. Come on.
What for?
I want to talk to you about John Shields. We found him sitting in his car out at Dana Point.
Why, the old rascal. Did he have a cubby little blonde with him?
We didn't see her. He was sitting there alone with a bullet hole in his temple.
I guess I read too many dime detective stories while I was in the Navy, because I'd got the idea that all small-town coppers had red faces and big feet. Tommy Wirtz had neither. He was an ex-homicide man from the big-town police crew. He kept me in his office all night, and believe me, he knew all the questions.
So, you're a friend of the family, is that Dolan?
Yeah, you might say that.
Yeah, I might say it, but what I want to know is what you might say.
What do you want me to do, Wirtz? Break out my Evershop and tell you about my lifetime?
Don't get smart with me, Dolan, because we know all about you.
I'm blushing in shame.
Well, if you are, it doesn't show. We know that you never met the Shields anyplace before. Not until the other day when Mrs. Shields went up to the city and hired you.
And what happened in the second chapter?
We wonder why she hired you.
Now, Polly, you got me. I was hired to come down here and get a shiner from her husband. See it?
He's a good workman. Ever see this before?
32 automatic. Mind if I pick? This is the baby that did it, huh?
That's it.
Never saw it before. I carry a 38 myself.
I know. We found it when we went through your things.
You boys don't miss a trick in Sagona, do you?
We can't afford to, Dolan. Here, you can take your gun back. I presume you've got a permit to carry it.
Didn't you find that, too, when you went through my stuff?
Here's something for your book, sonny. The only fingerprints on the death gun were John Shields. There are powder burns on his temple.
That would make it suicide.
Maybe. Except I remember that appearances aren't always what they seem to be.
Ah, Works, old boy. You've been cribbing from the copybooks again.
Okay, smart guy. Here's another thing. Don't leave town.
Why, I wouldn't dream of it. I love the quiet air here in Saguna Beach.
Never mind Weisenheimer. Beat it for now and tell Mrs. Shields I won't need her anymore either. She's waiting outside.
Oh, is she your guest, too?
You might call it that. And Dolan.
Yeah?
Keep your nose clean.
Oh, I do, pal. That's why I carry this box of Kleenex.
Ross, is everything all right?
Come on, Mrs. Shields. Let's get out of here.
Mr. Works, doesn't he...
He doesn't, beautiful. Out.
Oh. Does he think it's murder, Ross?
Works? He's not sure.
Ross, what do you think?
Did your husband have a lot of enemies?
More than he had friends. Sometimes I think everybody hated him. I've seen old Phineas so angry that he looked positively murderous.
I can imagine. What about the blonde at the saloon?
John definitely promised me he was through with her. But still... Oh, I'm so confused. Maybe it was suicide after all.
Yeah, maybe it was. See you later, beautiful.
Ross, where are you going?
Where polite ladies wouldn't dream of going. To Jarvis's Bluebird.
The Bluebird? What for?
Have to see a man. About a woman. Hiya, Jarvis.
Well, a fella, this is my black-eyed friend, Mr. Dolan. How's the glimmer this morning, Dolan?
How does it look to you?
It looks like it needs a drink. Have one?
Thanks.
Luck.
And to you.
Too bad about Shields, isn't it?
Yeah. Mr. Shields is all broken up.
He was such a husky guy. Never thought he'd bump himself off.
No. Well, he and that blonde were pretty close.
Yeah. Very close.
I wonder how she feels.
Pretty bad, I imagine. No fun, losing your boyfriend.
Had it that bad, huh?
Looked like Mrs. Shields was on the way up. And, she was in.
Well, what's her name?
The blonde?
Yeah.
Betty Warner.
Uh-huh. Where is she now?
I fired her.
Uh-huh. Where's she live?
I'm not sure. She moved recently.
Why? Oh, nothing. Just thought she might be looking for a new playmate.
You work fast, don't you?
Why not?
Now listen, Dolan. Play off that Warner dame. She's smart. Also, she's, tough.
Jarvis was right. The Warner babe was smart. It took me half the morning to get her address. I finally located her in a motel out of town a ways. I took a cab and pulled up and started to look around.
What do you want, mister?
I'm looking for Betty Warner. What's her number?
No Betty Warner living here, mister.
Well, maybe she's using another name. She's a gal about so tall with blonde hair and she walks like this.
On you, it don't look good.
Oh.
There's a girl who might be your friend down in cabin 8.
Thanks, pal.
What might your name be?
It might be Smith.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
I walked past cabin 8 and around the back. There was a rear entrance, a door with a window. I could look through and see the Warner babe packing like she had 1 minute to make the train. I opened the door and walked in.
What do you want?
Me? Oh, I just want to make with a few words.
If that's what you want, go down to the library, get a dictionary. You can make with all the words you like.
But I want to talk to you.
Look, Mr. Dolan, I don't like you. I haven't liked you since you walked in that beer joint and cracked wise. Now get out of here. I'm busy.
Leaving town?
No, I'm just packing because I like the feel of leather.
Did you know that John Shields is dead? He was found in his car at Dana Point with a bullet hole in his head.
No, he couldn't. That couldn't happen to him.
I told her the whole story, and she sat there chewing her lips like she was wearing chocolate instead of lipstick. In spite of the fear and trembling show she put on, she looked as guilty as... Well, she calmed down after a while, and we talked. We had a drink. We topped that one off with several more. And finally, she promised to hang around town if I promised to keep my mouth shut about where she was. It was a good trade. And pretty soon, I went down to old Phineas Baxter's shack on the beach. It was dark, and he lit things up for me.
Yeah. Sure, I hated him, Sonny. I guess I hated him more than anybody in town.
You're chatting your way right into the gas chamber.
You think I did it, eh? Well, supposing I did. Supposing you just prove that little item.
Skip it, Phineas. Why did you hate him?
You know why. You saw the way he treated me last night. Well, Sonny, that ain't nothing compared to what really happened.
No?
You never knew I backed him when he first got to be one of them promoters, did you? Never knew it was old Phineas who put up the money, did you? You never knew that he never paid me back a single cent.
Shields is, was quite a guy.
He was a thieving rat, that's what he was. When I went busted and asked him for my money, he stood there laughing at me. And gave me this old shack to live in and $10 a month for polishing his car.
Never paid off, huh?
John Shields never paid off anybody. And there's something I know about his marriage, too. Hey, what's the matter with the lights?
Where are your fuses?
Right outside the door.
Well, let's see whether one of them blew out or not. Boy, it's as dark as Hades out.
Oh! Mr. Dolan? Mr. Dolan, where are you? Hey, what's going on around here? Turn off that flashlight. No. No. No, I won't tell. Honest, I won't.
The noise boomed around in my head, and I was sure I was back on the beach at Okinawa with the guns going full blast. Then I opened one eye and sat up in a hurry. I looked for old Phineas and found him lying on the sand next to me. Somebody had used an iron bar on him. He wasn't so nice to look at. I tried to remember what had happened just before the lights went out and remembered only one thing. Phineas saying,
"There's something I know about his marriage."
My gun was gone, but I still had my flashlight. I looked over Phineas's place very carefully. Oh, very carefully. And found what I was looking for. Also, the old man's gun, which was something else I wanted. I staggered back downtown and made a long-distance phone call. Then I went on an errand.
Ross Dolan!
What's wrong, baby? You seem surprised to see me.
It's rather late for a visit. Besides, I'm in seclusion.
Yeah. I'm beginning to get the drift of the whole thing. Where is he?
There's no one here. Oh, you're drunk. Look at your head. It's all bloody. I'm going to call the police.
You're not going anyplace. Where is he?
Let go of me!
Let's drop the injured and grieving wife pose, huh, baby? Where's Jarvis?
How do I know where Jarvis is? What are you talking about?
It's a little late, Mrs. Shields. When I looked around Phineas's shack, I found out all about it. I found the old man's scrapbook. Or didn't you know he kept one?
Ross, listen. Listen. Let me tell you all about it.
Baby. Let me tell you. You wanted to get rid of John Shields the worst way, and you hoped to set me up as a fall guy. Or the dame down at Davis's joint. She could be a fall guy.
You're crazy. I could have divorced him.
It doesn't gel, beautiful. You forget the scrapbook. There's a little item in there. It tells about a woman who was paroled from a mental hospital into the custody of a man who married her. A man who wouldn't divorce her because he was in love with her. Oh, yeah, Shields was a louse, all right, but he was in love with you.
That's why he was making a big play for the Warner babe. Trying to make you jealous. But you were nuts about Jarvis, who was an ex-con.
I could kill you.
Like you knocked off Shields? When he went for that ride, you were in the back seat. You fed him a Mickey in his last drink. Then you took his gun, held it in your handkerchief, and shot him through the temple.
Ross, listen. Listen, I didn't do it. It was Jarvis. He did the whole thing. He planned it all by himself. He forced me to help him.
Okay, Laura. I might have known you'd pull that reach, Dolan.
I was afraid you weren't going to make it, Jarvis. Or were you in the kitchen all the time?
You're a pretty smart handy Andy, aren't you, Dolan? Just stand where you are.
You were the one who knocked off the old man. You followed me, didn't you?
You're talking, Dolan.
And you killed old Phineas when you saw he was going to spill.
I think I'm going to let you have it.
No, you fool. Someone will hear the shot.
So what? I've got Dolan's gun. I'll hold it in a handkerchief like you did to your old man. Then you'll find the body.
Just like that, huh?
Yeah. Just like that. Well, Dolan, it's been nice knowing you. Like they say in Spanish, hasta mañana.
Yeah. Hasta mañana. I was watching that trigger finger, and when it started to whiten, I hit the floor, heaved sidewise, and gave it to him with the old man's gun. His bullet splashed into the carpet at my feet. I shot him through the heart. Hasta mañana always means until tomorrow, except there'll be no tomorrow for Jarvis. His light goes out for keeps. Well, after I turned Laura, screaming and kicking, over the works down at the station and got myself cleared of any possible charges, I got a little sick at Saguna Beach and thought I'd powder back up to the city, stopping along the way for one or two, and listen to a little music, even if it did come from a jukebox. Well, it was more fun listening to those corny pop tunes than you'd imagine. Because I picked up the blonde Betty Warner and took her along. And you know something? She wasn't nearly as tough as you'd imagine. Good night, folks.
Don't forget to listen again next week, same time, when you will hear William Gargan say,
I deal in crime.
I Deal in Crime, starring William Gargan as Ross Dolan, is a special presentation of the American Broadcasting Company. Written by Ted Hediger, directed by Leonard Rieg, with original music composed and conducted by Skitch Henderson. Dresser Dahlstedt speaking. I Deal in Crime came to you from Hollywood.
When it comes to the business of making music, we know one fellow who's dean of them all. It's Paul Whiteman. Paul has picked some songs that have proved they're here to stay, the top tunes of yesterday. It's a show you'll enjoy called Forever Tops. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Well, there we be. Hope you enjoyed it. That's my little kick at the can, and now it's my turn to flip it back to Michael, and he'll take us the rest of the way. Mike, the mic is yours.
Well, that was a good show, Doc. I enjoyed it. Well, guys, this'll about do it for this edition of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Hope that you guys all enjoyed the programs. And hope to see you all back here next week for another edition of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. And, as always, we do take requests. So you can email me at mikeamelie@earthlink.net or Rick at,
and that would be RichardMSpurgeon@yahoo.ca.
All right, guys, take care and enjoy your weekend and hope to see you soon. Bye for now.